Welcome to the Capital News. I am your host, Alex Caritas. Today is Tuesday, May 25th, 2021. Thank you so much for joining me. The title of today's podcast, Higher Housing Prices and Lower Sales. Well, who would have thunk this one up, ladies and gentlemen? 2 + 2 = 4. This is only the law of demand, isn't it? Higher prices resulting in lower quantity demanded. This is how this stuff works. This is economics in action. All right, we have people, maybe even an entire generation, that is being priced out of the housing market. You think that's good? No, it's not good. It's not good at all. Because for many people, and for many families around the country, that's their biggest asset. That's how they build some form of wealth, is through their home. People can't afford it. And despite having near record low mortgage rates, I mean, they have been ticking up. But as I have been shouting at the top of my lungs here for the past couple of years since this podcast has been online, it is not just about being able to make the payment, being able to quote unquote afford the payment. If I can afford the payment, then I can afford the asset. That's not how this works. There's going to come a time, and we're there. We very well may have been here for quite a while now, but we are here. I think this is where we're starting to see system overload, as we discussed yesterday. Excuse me. This is the point of system exhaustion. Enough's enough. Yeah, we got low interest rates, but I can't afford the house. It's too much. It's too much. I don't have any time to get an inspector in here to see if there's anything wrong with it, because one person, it's all cash. I'm dealing with investors. I can't do that. These are the stories around the country, because this is not subprime driven, which is a good thing. Okay, we know what happened then in the great financial crisis because of the subprime fiasco. So we have a different story now, but it's really all driven because of distortionary policies and fraudulent behavior and practices, as far as I'm concerned. So we'll get to some of that housing data here momentarily, go through market performance, some comments made from some members of the Federal Reserve, the Vice Chair, Richard Clarita, coming out and mentioning the words runaway inflation. So I want to mention that too. And we'll go over the Fed's balance sheet here momentarily. And then at the end of yesterday's podcast, I brought up the topics of COVID-19, Bill Gates, Dr. Fauci, Jeffrey Epstein, the Wuhan lab, and of course China, all connected somehow one way or another in the changing narrative in the mainstream media. And again, we don't believe in coincidence here at the Capital News, especially with these types of stories. So the question becomes, why are these narratives changing? So something is afoot. It's pure speculation on my part and most of your parts as well, unless you have some sort of insider information. But I can tell you that something doesn't smell right to have these types of narratives changing in the manner in which they are right now, because a lot of these stories were simply dismissed. You were a right-wing nut, you were a conspiracy theorist, etc., etc. Now, oh, wait a minute, maybe some things are turning. Maybe the quote-unquote science is changing. Maybe there needs to be an investigation here or there. And if we have time, I'll get to those questions at the end of the podcast. But here we have house prices in the U.S. rise the most since 2013. The S&P CoreLogic, Case-Shiller, 20-city home price index, that's a mouthful, I know, in the U.S. soared 13.3% year-over-year in March, following an upwardly revised 12% growth in February and way above forecasts of a 12.3% gain. It is the largest annual increase since December of 2013, with Phoenix, San Diego, and Seattle reporting the highest gains among the 20 cities. Considering 9 U.S. Census divisions, house prices increased 13.2%, the most since December of 2005. So again, it's important to mention that the great financial crisis, the subprime crisis, that's where it came from. It came from subprime borrowers. A ton of leverage in the system because nobody was putting any money down. You didn't have to. If you could fog a mirror, you got a loan to buy a house. Completely reckless. completely fraudulent, criminal, and of course, nobody goes to jail. Okay, I think one guy maybe went to jail, one banker went to jail a couple years after the fiasco, maybe just to prove a point. That's it. That's it. So don't think for a second that it's equal justice under the law. It's not. This is a banana republic. It's a two-tiered justice system. And you got people almost getting away with murder, and yet some poor schmuck walking across the street, jaywalking, with maybe a little bit of marijuana in his pocket, they lock him up and throw away the key. Not saying that's right, but you get the point I'm trying to make here. This is ridiculous, and there's no end in sight. So we dealt with the subprime crisis. It was not contained as the Federal Reserve told us it was going to be. All hell broke loose. It was systemic. It was global. And as far as I'm concerned, we are still feeling the effects of the great financial crisis. We are still dealing with these things. We still have the Federal Reserve purchasing about $40 billion per month in mortgage-backed securities. Okay, all right, okay, we can see maybe they're doing it back then. It was an emergency. It was supposed to be a once-in-a-lifetime catastrophe. Okay, you want to print the money? You want to try this quantitative easing thing? Okay, let's see what happens. It was a decade ago, and they're still doing it. So what's going on here? And there's no end in sight on it either. Now, they're finally starting to be questioned on this. Look at these housing prices. How can you continue to justify purchasing $40 billion a month in mortgage-backed securities? You can't. They don't have an answer. That was Jay Powell. That was the quote during the last Federal Open Market Committee news conference he gave last month. That was it. These people are a joke. Do not support these people. And of course, we can't vote for these ones. They just get nominated. They get put before Senate. They get approved. Bing, bang, boom. That's the end of the story. There's no accountability. So, now we have a different story in the housing sector, because this is not being driven by just people who want a house and they can fog a mirror and there's a banker who's going to give them the loan. Okay? This different story now. Now, it's a lot of investors. It's pension funds. It's private equity. It's hedge funds. People with a lot of cash coming in. I don't care what the price is. We got to bid it up 10, 20, 35%, 50% above ask. We'll do it. And we're going to do it in cash. So, younger people can't compete with this. Older people, well-established in their career, looking to move up or whatever the case might be, they can't compete with this. This is like the Great Reset. This is like the World Economic Forum. You will own nothing and you will like it. Well, you can't afford anything. And then this has ripple effects in the rental market. So you can buy, you can rent, or you can own a tent. Those are your options. And it's unfortunate that we see more and more tent cities popping up across this country, which is supposed to be the greatest country on the face of the planet. We can print out of thin air trillions of dollars, throw it into the system for the purpose of jacking up equity prices, jacking up bond prices so we keep the yields low. But we can't seem to do anything to help people where it really matters. So if Jay Powell, the chair of the Federal Reserve, has to drive by a tent city in Washington, D.C., the nation's capital, so be it. He can't figure out how to help those folks. He can figure out how to give money to Apple and Verizon and AT&T and Toyota and Volkswagen. He can figure out how to give them money, some of the largest corporations on the face of the planet that don't need it. Some of them aren't even U.S. corporations, but he can't figure out how to give it to the people. And I'm not saying that that's the solution or what should be done. But my God, if you can give it to the largest corporations on earth, maybe you can find the way to give it to people who actually need it. But that's not going to happen. And of course, Jay Powell was asked this question, and he dodged it for the most part, saying, well, you know, I will eventually perhaps go and visit these tent cities across Washington, D.C., but I'm going to do it when sort of the theater of all of it sort of dies down, because I don't want the media following me around and the story being about me when it really should be about these poor people living in these tents across the country. Yeah, all right. Yeah. You believe that story, I got a bridge to sell you. So they're aware. They know what they're doing, but they can't stop because they're trapped. They're trapped, folks. And so when we have this difference between subprime and what we have today, where we got a lot of cash offers, I think this gives it more room to run, probably through the remainder of this year. Now, things are going to cool off a little bit here or there, and there's several months left in 2021. That's an eternity if we've learned anything over the past couple of years. 7 months is going to feel like an eternity. A lot of things can happen within that time frame. But the Federal Reserve is going to continue to find themselves between a rock and a hard place. Because on one hand, they are trying to jack up all of these financial asset prices, housing prices included. But at the same time, they have to fit a narrative that they're trying to help the middle class, that they're trying to get people to build wealth, to buy homes. Well, they can't afford them. So what are you going to do? Are you going to increase interest rates? Are you going to try to prick a bubble here or there? Get housing prices down? Well, who's that going to hurt? Isn't that going to hurt the top 1%, the top 10% who the Federal Reserve really works for? Are they going to let that happen? Because if they prick one bubble, might it prick another, and another, and another, and another? Because the dominoes are set. They don't have the control to prick one and not another. You understand? They are so trapped, it's not even funny. And I called this out in 2019. It was the first Capital Economics presentation I did. Check it out on thecapitalnews.com or find it on our YouTube channel as well. Are central bankers trapped? It was back in 2019, before all of this fiasco. Because the writing was on the wall then that they cannot continue with this nonsense. They cannot continue with this asinine economic policy. Just can't do it. Reality is going to kick in. Economic gravity is going to take hold. That's what we are witnessing. And they will fight like hell to stop it, because that's all they can do. They'll change the narrative. They'll blame somebody else. They're going to pull out all the stops, all the tricks. They'll come up with things that we've never heard of before to justify what they're going to do, what they're doing now, and what they're going to do. Something also I called out before the Nobody Cares Act 1.0 and representation and recourse. They're going to use the pandemic to justify the unjustifiable, and that is what we have been witnessing for, what, past year and a half now, right? And it's continuing, and it will get worse. Because when some of these markets start to slip, the Fed will start to panic. And what are they going to do? Are they going to allow these markets to correct, which most likely is meaning lower prices and maybe quite significantly lower prices? Or are they going to say, oh, we can't have that, and we're going to continue to blow up our balance sheet? And last week, we saw them expand their balance sheet by $90 billion, 1 week alone, hitting a new all-time high. Getting closer and closer to the $8 trillion mark. And now we have some Fed officials and others speculating that the Federal Reserve's balance sheet could hit $9 trillion by 2023. I argue it could hit that this year. I argue it could get close to $10 trillion this year. Now, that's a long shot, but it could happen, because if something does break down, whether it's the housing market, whether it's the stock market, whether it's the bond market, and the Federal Reserve panics, because that's what they will do, and they start, the only thing that they can do to attempt to fight back market forces is to throw more money into the system. And as we discussed yesterday with reverse repo, there is too much liquidity in the system. Or there's simply, they've taken too much collateral, too many bonds off the market, because they're holding so many of them. They're buying so many of them. Again, $2.5 trillion the Federal Reserve purchased in the last year alone of Uncle Sam's debt. That's almost 10% of what's outstanding in total. Trying to put all of this stuff into context, provide a little perspective here, because it's important to do so, because tossing around these numbers make your head spin. It's extremely difficult to fully grasp these numbers, and we really can't do it. We really cannot grasp the concept of a trillion. And at the rate we're going, we're going to be into quadrillions in a not too distant future. That's how broke a joke we are. It's a first world banana republic. But again, getting back, sorry for the tangent, getting back to the housing market here. We got, you always have to deal with the relationship of supply and demand. Well, there's simply not that much supply on the market, and there still is a ton of demand. So that there tells you that prices are going up, okay? And if the appetite is there for investors, for people with deep pockets, individuals, and I think a lot of it is foreigners trying to get money out of Dodge and their real legitimate third world banana republic, because they're concerned with what's going on in their countries and they're trying to get their money out of Dodge into real estate in countries around the world, in more developed markets, whether that's Europe, Australia, Canada, United States. That's where a lot of this money is going into. And they don't care at what price because they're scared. So I think that's also a part of it, and I think that gets underreported. So that's something to be mindful of. But as long as this cash keeps coming, and as long as equity prices keep going up, and the rich keep getting richer, and this isn't about class warfare, but this is the system. This is what's going on here. Connect the dots. It's not that difficult. Who owns the vast majority of financial assets? What is the direct policy and the direct result of all of this monetary nonsense? It's to increase the prices of these financial assets. So you sell a little bit here in one, you take some profit, you go buy another one there. So sell some stocks, go buy some real estate. That's the game plan here. But it's reaching that point. It's reaching that intersection where people are going to get fed up. Can't afford to live. Can't afford to buy a house. Can't afford rent. Don't want to live in a tent. And you're going to get political backlash. You're going to get social movements. And we still have to contend with all of the moratoriums and the forbearance, which is in the tens of billions of dollars. People don't have this kind of money. They got to pay that back. This is going to be a you-know-what show when all of this unravels. We haven't even dealt with all of this stuff yet. And that continuously gets swept under the rug because it's not a convenient narrative. It's not a very positive and uplifting narrative. So they would rather BS you as opposed to look you in the eye and take some sort of accountability and responsibility. Step up to the plate and be a leader. They don't want to do it. It's not in their arsenal. Lying is. Constantly changing the narrative is in their arsenal. Making stuff up is in their arsenal. Being honest, not there. And it ain't going to happen. So this thing, the housing market, has room to run higher. Prices will go lower, sales will continue lower. As long as we continue to see this dynamic, people simply cannot afford it. And that's going to cause a lot of problems. We're going to get to some other data on some of the other metrics from the Case-Shiller. We'll look at the broad market, the national index. We'll look at the 10-city home price index as well, just for comparison's sake. But market performance overnight here, we have the dollar index relatively flat right now at 89.59 on the dollar index. Bitcoin rebounding a little bit, almost up about 3%, currently at $39,400 a coin, so flirting with that 40,000 handle. We have some movement overnight here. We have the Kiwi, the New Zealand dollar, appreciating, strengthening against the greenback by 1.2%. That's a big move. The Australian dollar is also appreciating against the greenback, up about 0.5%. So that's something to be mindful of there. Overnight futures trading, we have the Dow Jones Industrial Average and the S&P 500 both up about 0.3%. The NASDAQ 100 is also in the green, up about 0.4%. The Japanese cash trade putting on a gain of 0.3% as well. Mixed bag across the pond today in Europe. Nothing major to the upside or downside to note. Cash trade in Australia is currently flat. Chinese stocks putting on a gain of 0.3% as well. On the commodity front, we have WTI at $66 a barrel, Brent at $68.69, natural gas continuing to flirt with the $3 handle at $2.94, gasoline $2.11, gold and silver doing fantastically well as far as I'm concerned, slow and steady wins the race, gold $1,906 an ounce, silver at $28.17 an ounce, lumber at $4.53 per pound, and lumber pulled back a little bit more today, $1,397 per 1,000 linear board feet. So as I have been mentioning with respect to precious metals, with gold and silver in particular, I would love to see a monthly close for gold above 1,900. I was happy at 1850, 1860, but this thing keeps on churning up, keeps breaking through other resistance levels on a technical perspective. 1900 is a fantastic psychological number, has some technical resistance as well. The next point of some strong resistance is probably going to be closer to the 1950 per ounce level. And if we take that out, folks, we could very easily test all-time highs that we saw last August, all right? And there is a ton of white space to the upside for gold. And the same case for silver. Again, I would like to see silver close on the month at $28 per ounce, if not higher. I want to see these convincing closes because, look, as far as I'm concerned, gold and silver are sniffing out inflation and a whole host of other geopolitical risks that the broader markets, I don't think, are taking into consideration. You know, this is the old bloodhound, gold and silver. This ain't their first rodeo. This bloodhound is sniffing it out. This is his territory. He knows these hills better than the young pup, okay? The young pup being cryptocurrencies. You want to bet on the cryptocurrencies? Be my guest. But they've never seen this type of stuff before. Hell, nobody really ever has. But I do know that gold and silver are still standing. I know that gold and silver have outlasted empires, and there's still fundamental use for them. Cryptocurrencies, yeah, maybe in the future, maybe now here and there, but this is tulip mania stuff that's going on right now. It's complete nonsense, gobbledygook. You can't make sense of a lot of this stuff. If there are cryptocurrencies, blockchain technologies, et cetera, that have a use case, that are going to build a better mousetrap, I'm all ears. There's a few of them out there that exist like that as far as I'm concerned. But this fascination and spectacle of Bitcoin is ridiculous. I mean, it is very easy to break down the arguments, if you can even call them that, of the largest advocates and proponents of Bitcoin. Basic questions they cannot answer. That tells me you got to stay away from it. Or at least if you're going to get involved with it, be extremely careful and understand what you're doing, what you're getting involved with. So pay attention to gold and silver. Neither of them are getting a lot of fanfare, which of course they never do or rarely ever do, but they are slowly but surely taking out one level of resistance after the next. That's what I like to see. So pay attention to those because they're sniffing out some problems that the broader markets are not covering. I cover them, but that's the advantage here. You get in early to the party, it can be to your advantage big time. And to round it out, Uncle Sam's 10-year junk note is yielding 1.57%, so still range-bound, but getting closer to that lower end of the range that we've been in for the past couple of months. And this is also an interesting question that needs to be posed to the Federal Reserve. Should we continue to now see a lower trend with Uncle Sam's junk, okay? We continue to see these yields move lower because when we saw this increase and this fast increase in yields over the past couple of months, past few months, some central banks panicked and tried to throw more liquidity into the system to buy up these bonds to push the yields lower, Federal Reserve said, uh-uh. They pretended to be Joe Cool. No problem here. Nothing to see here, folks. In fact, increasing yields is a good thing, because that means there's a recovery afoot. We're bouncing back, baby. Nothing to worry about. In fact, it's what we want to see. So, me being a logical person, I say, well, if that's the case, if that's their argument, that increasing yields means that a recovery is afoot, that it's underway, then wouldn't lower yields mean that there's some sort of correction underway or a weakening underway as opposed to a recovery? Isn't that just logical? Isn't that basic? So how low is it going to go until they would admit that something is wrong? Or would they say, oh, that's fantastic. There's a lot of demand for the debt because we're a good credit risk. Now, I mean, what story are they going to spin? Because as I stated earlier, you got the vice chair of the Federal Reserve, Rich Clarita, coming out and saying, well, if there is runaway inflation, the Federal Reserve can control it. Whoa, wait a minute. Stop the presses. What do you mean runaway inflation? We were told before that there was no inflation. Then we were told, well, you know, if there is inflation, it's going to be minor and it's going to be transitory. Then we were told, well, there might be higher inflation, but that's only because of the base effects. Things were so bad in 2020, and the year-over-year numbers are just going to look outrageous. But that's just transitory because of the base effects. Don't worry about it. Now, runaway inflation. What runaway inflation? You catch the trend here? You get my drift? These people tell you what's going on. You just have to listen to them. And they think that they can control it by doing what? They're going to increase interest rates. Get the hell out of here. Because that'll bring all this stuff down. They've been fighting like hell to get all this stuff up. Now, just like that, they're going to pull the plug. They might. Maybe they will. Maybe that's the plan. But if they do it, and they do it intentionally, then as far as I'm concerned, that is the plan. They just wanted to jack these prices up just to pull the rug out from everybody. Now, I don't think that that's what's going to happen. I don't think that that's what they're going to do. I think they're going to continue to fight inflation with inflation. They're going to continue to print more and more money. And if there is a big correction in the marketplace, well, that could spook them. And not only can that spook the Fed, but it's going to spook the Democrats and the Republicans alike and the White House. And now they might get together and say, oh, we have to pass more stimulus, more spending. Now they will miraculously get together and pass some sort of infrastructure bill. Yeah. Just as the excuse. And don't forget, that's coming down the pike too. Doesn't have to have a $1 trillion price tag on it. It could be a couple hundred billion here, a few hundred billion there. It could be piecemeal. So that things can be stomached, politically speaking, for one side or the other. But more spending is coming. Don't worry about it. We don't have the money. But that never stopped us before. And then lastly here, I'm not going to have enough time to go into the speculation. My apologies with COVID-19 and all that. So I'm going to have to save that for another day. Hopefully I can get to that tomorrow. But I just want to bring up the Case-Shiller Index for the national home price. All right, so the year-over-year increase is, again, 13.2%. And we have not seen this type of increase since 2005. And if you look at the peak back in 2005, that was in September of 2005. And that saw a year-over-year increase of 14.5%. And this was just slightly before the Great Financial Crisis. So if we continue with the current trend, and again, we are looking at a graph that is basically vertical, okay? So we could be there within a couple of months. 13.2% to 14.5%, it's not that big of a jump. It's definitely, I mean, it is, don't get me wrong, but we're not that far away is my point, okay? And that's on the national index. Getting to the 20-city composite, which we also mentioned before, again, 13.2% year-over-year change. Now here, this would take us back to November of 2013 at 13.8% peak. And of course, that was off of the effects of some of those base effects coming off of the great financial crisis. But if you want to go back, if you're curious to know where the peak was prior to the GFC, you got to go back to 2004 for the 20-city composite, where that peaked at 17.08% back in August of 2004. And then further breakdown, if you look at the 10-city composite, year over year, you have an increase of 12.8%, and you would have to go back to the peak of 2013 as well in November at 14% to sort of get these types of numbers. And then the peak prior to the great financial crisis at 20.5%. All right, and that was back in July of 2004. So we are very much on track to perhaps hit these types of numbers once again. How sustainable, you know, is really the question. Because we're seeing this hit the sales. And this is another brief article I just want to touch on. Again, this is out of MarketWatch. Because these construction costs are driving a lot of market behavior. This is what we're seeing. This is economics in action here. Okay, this is not just theory or textbook. This is real-world scenario stuff here. So builders are reluctant to sign sales contracts for houses. High prices erode new home sales. Again, this is out of MarketWatch. Okay, this is just basic economics. The numbers. New home sales fell in April by nearly 6% as affordability constraints begin to weigh on home buyers. New residential sales occurred at a seasonally adjusted annual rate of 863,000 in April, according to the U.S. Census Bureau. The Census Bureau also revised the March figure for new home sales down to 917,000. Compared to last year, however, new home sales were still shown to be up by 48%. The new home sales report is prone to very significant revisions, as evidenced by the confidence interval cited in the April print. The U.S. Census Bureau noted that the change in new home sales between March and April could be 11.2% larger or smaller than what it is currently reporting. Don't you love government statistics? The median forecast of economists pulled by MarketWatch was 959,000. So what happened? Sales rates decreased in every part of the country except for the West, where they rose by 3.9%. The largest sales decline occurred in the Northeast, with a drop of nearly 14%. The inventory of new homes for sale at the end of April was down from March. It equated to a 3.8-month supply, down from 4.6-month supply the month before. So there you have it, those dynamics of supply and demand continuing to put upward pressure on these home prices. The big picture. Some analysts warn that new home sales may disappoint ahead of the report's release. Pantheon Macroeconomics, for instance, their chief economist, Ian Shepherdson, had projected a larger decline than what occurred, citing trends in mortgage application data. The Mortgage Banker Association's data, to that extent, has suggested declining demand among home buyers. Quote, over time, though, and usually not much time, new home sales gravitate to the pace implied by the trend in mortgage applications, according to The Economist. He continues, so, absent any other reliable near-time indicators of the pace of sales, we have to expect a steep drop in April. The decline in mortgage demand could be a reflection of both buyers' and builders' concerns about affordability, as mortgage rates have risen this year alongside home prices, a double whammy. The market for new homes is seeing price pressures not just due to the high demand for housing, but also because of rising material costs that are driving construction expenses higher. So, builders are reluctant to sign sales contracts for houses they haven't broken ground on because of the possibility that costs will continue to rise, hitting their profits. Some builders are waiting at least until houses are framed before accepting a buyer's offer. This thus limits the number of home sales, even as demand remains strong. Well, this is what happens, folks. When, you know, you go back to the month of February, and then you had lumber prices adding an additional $24,000 to construction costs. Now you fast forward to May, and it's now $36,000. So you can't blame these builders for being hesitant to sign a deal with buyers because they get screwed. And then conversely, can you imagine being somebody who's building a new home or perhaps even buying a new home right now, and we should see a massive correction, maybe in these commodity prices, maybe in lumber, maybe in copper, maybe in drywall, any other type of construction material, or maybe in the housing market itself. Can you imagine the carnage? Again, just another reason why the Federal Reserve is trapped. Because what are they going to do? All hell breaks loose. Or what are they going to come and do? Are they going to let? They just going to say, well, this time we're just going to let market forces clear it out? Or are they going to come back in and try to prop it all up again? These are the questions that need to be asked, and they need to be answered. But because of these distortionary effects, this is what we get. And now it has finally led us to higher housing prices and lower sales. Stay diversified, stay vigilant, and stay with the Capital News. I am Alex Kritis. Godspeed.